What was FBI Director James Comey's motivation for announcing an investigation of presidential candidate Hillary Clinton's emails within 2 weeks of the 2016 election? Is there conclusive forensic proof that Russia did not hack into the Democratic National Committee's computer system? Will the revelation of private text between two FBI officials in 2016 expose high crimes and misdemeanors in the U.S. that dwarf the Watergate scandal? Will the U.S. deep state prevail in the latest presidential power struggle? On this week's Global Research News Hour, we continue our discussion on the anniversary of the Trump inauguration with a peek behind the scenes at motivations and machinations thwarting not just a new president, but the democratic authority of the American public. We spend the hour with former CIA analyst and founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, Ray McGovern. On this week's program, Anniversary of the Trump Presidency, Part 2, From Russiagate to FBIgate. Bringing you the analysis beyond the media headlines, the Global Research News Hour is on the air. Welcome to the Global Research News Hour for the week of January 26th, 2018. I'm series host and producer Michael Welch. Global Research News Hour is a special radio collaboration between the Center for Research on Globalization and campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabe territory in the homeland of the Métis Nation. We seek to provide you with access to analysis of the major issues shaping our world today from thinkers, researchers, and unique political personalities rarely addressed by major media. Our program is available from the Center's website, globalresearch.ca. We can also be heard on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. We'll begin our show with news notes, a sampling of articles from the Global Research News site. These developments surrounding the debates over a national budget is indicative of the failure of the two-party ruling class system in representing the majority of working class and nationally oppressed as it relates to immigration policy, racism, gender parity, the demand for higher wages and benefits within the workforce. During the administration of President Barack Obama, the DHS deported more undocumented people than any previous government in U.S. history. Today, under Trump, the Democrats are projecting themselves as defenders of DACA, while willingness to build a border wall is within the realm of possibility. Working class and people of color communities need their own political party which can speak in the name of the majority within U.S. society. Absent of a major break with the Democrats among their key constituencies and the formation of a mass party of the people, these compromises will continue. That comes from the article, Federal Government Shutdown and the Duopoly System of Two-Party Politics, by Abayomi Azikiwe, posted January 25th. Friends of the Earth International, the world's largest grassroots environmental network, has warned that the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, trade deal could threaten people and planet if signed and ratified by national parliaments in March this year. The remarks came as Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, the Australian Trade Minister, and other leaders meeting at the World Economic Forum in Davos from the 23rd to 26th of January celebrated the conclusion of the deal between 11 countries in Asia-Pacific. Sam Kosar-Gilbert, Friends of the Earth International trade campaigner, said, quote, "It is no wonder the corporate elite at Davos are celebrating this zombie TPP deal. It enables foreign companies to sue governments in secret trade tribunals for almost any measure that harms their expected profits," unquote. That comes from the article, Davos, Zombie TPP Trade Deal Threatens Our Fractured World, by Friends of the Earth International, posted January 24th. It's been noted that last year, a Michigan State University economist, Mark Skidmore, managed to establish $21 trillion in unauthorized spending in the Departments of Defense and Housing and Urban Development for the years 1998 through 2015. Skidmore got involved when he heard Catherine Austin Fitz, former Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, refer to a report which indicated the Army had $6.5 trillion in unsupported spending back in 2015. It's curious that only $122 billion were approved by the Congress, which meant that the Department of Defense spent 54 times more funds than it was allowed. In his article penned for the Forbes, Skidmore announced the gargantuan nature of the undocumented federal spending that, quote, should be a great concern to all taxpayers, unquote. It looks that Washington spears no money in a bid to export American-style democracy across the globe. That comes from the article, No Taxpayers' Money is Spared in Washington's Military Adventures Worldwide, Trillions of Unauthorized Spending, by Martin Berger, posted January 24th, originally appearing at New Eastern Outlook. As topics like empire, imperialism, and even war and peace are censored and excised from political debate, U.S. officials, subservient media, and the rest of the U.S. political class conjure up an illusion of peace for domestic consumption by simply not mentioning our country's 291,000 occupation troops in 183 other countries, or the 39,000 bombs and missiles dropped on our neighbors in Iraq, Syria, and Afghanistan since Trump took office. The 100,000 bombs and missiles dropped on these and other countries by Obama, and the 70,000 dropped on them by Bush, too, have likewise been swept down a kind of real-time memory hole, leaving America's collective conscience untroubled by what the public was never told in the first place. But in reality, it's been a long time since U.S. leaders of either party resisted the temptation to threaten anyone, anywhere, or to follow through on their threats with fire and fury bombing campaigns, coups, and invasions. This is how empires maintain a credible threat to undergird their power and discourage other countries from challenging them. But far from establishing the Pax Americana promised by policymakers and military strategists in the 1990s, from Paul Wolfowitz and Dick Cheney to Madeleine Albright and Hillary Clinton, the results have been consistently catastrophic, producing what the new National Defense Strategy calls, quote, increased global disorder characterized by decline in the long-standing rules-based international order, unquote. That comes from the article, A National Defense Strategy of Sowing Global Chaos, by Nicholas J.S. Davies, posted January 24th, originally appearing at Consortium News. Much has been made of the supposed stark contradiction between Trump's right-wing economic nationalism and Davos' supposed globalist ethos amid predictions of some kind of a showdown between the U.S. president and his European counterparts, particularly German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Emmanuel Macron. In reality, both Merkel and Macron will have left Davos before Trump even arrives. Moreover, their governments are also pursuing national interests under conditions in which the entire post-World War II system of trading relations established under the aegis of the then unchallenged dominance of U.S. imperialism is breaking down. The source of this breakdown is to be found not in the demagogic rants of Donald Trump, but rather the insoluble contradictions of the capitalist system, which is driving every country into a war of each against all in a ruthless struggle for profits and markets. This is creating the same kind of global tensions and conflicts that paved the way to the Second World War. That comes from the article, World Economic Forum Meets in Davos Under Shadow of Crisis and War, by Bill Van Auken, posted January 24th, originally appearing at World Socialist website. Oxfam's report outlines the key factors driving up rewards for shareholders and corporate bosses at the expense of workers' pay and conditions. These include the erosion of workers' rights, the excessive influence of big business over government policymaking, and the relentless corporate drive to minimize costs in order to maximize returns to shareholders. Winnie Byanyima, executive director of Oxfam International, said, quote, "The billionaire boom is not a sign of a thriving economy, but a symptom of a failing economic system. The people who make our clothes, assemble our phones, and grow our food are being exploited to ensure a steady supply of cheap goods and swell the profits of corporations and billionaire investors," unquote. That was from a press release under the headline, "Richest 1% bagged 82% of wealth created last year. Poorest half of humanity got nothing," by Oxfam International, posted January 23rd. These are just a few of the featured articles appearing last week on the Global Research website. Regular visitors to the site are encouraged to send monetary contributions by fax, mail, or online. Just go to globalresearch.ca and click Donate on the menu bar. President Donald Trump's first year in office has been racked with controversy. He has been lambasted in the press for his ongoing dismissals of mainstream media sources like CNN as fake news. He has promoted more militaristic and environmentally retrograde policies. He's fostered tax cuts for the wealthy at the expense of the most vulnerable, attacked refugees and so-called illegal immigrants, and made headlines weekly with the ongoing Russiagate investigation and the various revelations springing from that. All of the focus on Trump has largely distracted the public from equally concerning machinations which ultimately undermine the fabric of democracy in America, such as it is. From the election campaign of 2016 through the election itself, the post-election period, and the first year of Trump's mandate, we have witnessed the efforts of individuals within the FBI, DOJ, the Obama administration, and the Clinton campaign to undermine the affairs of state and subvert the will of the people. Some independent analysts have chosen to profile and expose some of these misdeeds. One of them is Ray McGovern. Ray McGovern was an Army and CIA intelligence analyst for 30 years. He chaired national intelligence estimates through the 1980s and prepared the president's daily brief for Nixon, Ford, and Reagan. He is co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. His website is raymcgovern.com. He's been published at consortiumnews.com and globalresearch.ca, among other online publications. He joins us from Arlington, Virginia. Welcome back to the show, Mr. McGovern.
Thank you, Michael.
Basically, the theme of this this show, as I see it, is basically the manipulation, behind-the-scenes manipulations of an election campaign, of a presidential candidate, and of the media. Looking at that election, I feel like a tempting place to kind of maybe introduce it is that October surprise with Mr. James Comey and his second letter to Congress informing of the FBI investigation of Clinton's emails on October 26th. Now, I guess given what we know now, why did that happen when it did, and who has been to blame or credit for that that unusual instance?
It's really hard to explain why Comey did what he did in saying, "Whoops, we got new material," and then said, "Oh, there's nothing in the new material that affects anything," other than to suspect that he was afraid that someone within his own organization would leak that information, namely that there was new material on a new computer. Material indeed from Hillary Clinton's top aide, Huma Abedin, and that he didn't tell Congress as he had promised to. So the way I guess at this is that Comey said, "All right, look, I'll tell Congress. Won't make any difference. Hillary's a shoo-in. And if there's nothing there, I'll be real quick and say there's nothing there, and nobody will take any notice." So, again, that's all speculation. Okay. What we want to talk about, I think, is more hard facts, but that's how I reconstruct that.
Okay, well let's get into those facts then. There was a couple of things going on. I mean, besides the fact of this election, there was these the use of the Hillary Clinton's use of this private server, which she may have been using for business other than government business, which is also. Not only compromises the classified nature of a lot of material that she'd be conducting as state, but takes it out of public purview and is potentially being used for personal purposes or in the context of the Clinton Foundation. So there's certain figures there that are apparently have suspicions about what's going on there, and rather than acting to hold people accountable, they seem to be looking to try to cover up those effective crimes at state. So do you want to try to get into that? Who is engaged in this enterprise?
Well, it was Hillary Clinton herself and her pal Bill, and they were running this Clinton Foundation, going to the Saudis and dunning them for millions and millions of dollars. And they were doing that sort of on the side, even while she was Secretary of State. So it's corrupt as can be, and there's no question but that aside from the violations of security, aside from the fact that the Russians, the Chinese, anybody could have got into that server because it was unprotected, then there was this this financial corruption. You know, money talks, and there's a lot of that stuff available. The fact that she was not prosecuted for that is due largely to a fellow named Robert Mueller. I repeat, Robert Mueller, who was one of the people who looked into that, said, oh, no, this aluminum one thing, don't worry about that, it's not really a problem. So the corruption is deep-seated, and this whole business about investigations and faux investigations. Let me just give you an example. Now, here's Comey, and he hears in early July of 2016, that is the campaign year, he hears that this cyber outfit in the employ of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, has said that there's malware inserted into the DNC computers, and there are Russian telltale signs on that malware. The next day, this entity, we don't know who he or she or what it is, Guccifer 2.0, comes up and says, yep, CrowdStrike has it exactly right. We're the ones. We did it. And we're working for the Russians and for WikiLeaks. Whoa. Now, all hell breaks loose, okay? All hell breaks loose because the legend has started that the Russians are going to be investigating, are going to be interfering in our election. Now, that is the beginning of June, okay? 3 days before all that happened, Julian Assange announced that he had emails relating to Hillary Clinton. So he announces that on the 12th of June, and 3 days later we had this very curious preemptive strike by CrowdStrike, the computer firm, and by Guccifer 2.0, whoever he is, saying, oh, yep, Julian Assange has announced that he's got emails relating to Hillary Clinton. How'd he get them? It was the Russians, and we can prove it from the little telltale signs in Cyrillic that they left on some of the messages. So, that's June, okay? Then, Julian Assange releases these emails on July 22nd, 2 days before the Democratic National Committee convenes. Whoa! They are dynamite. What's in them? They show very clearly that Hillary Clinton stole the nomination, the Democratic nomination, from Bernie Sanders. It's clear as a bell. What happens? Well, the Clinton folks had already kind of decided that since they had prepared the way to blame the Russians for this, they would try to distract attention from the essence, from the content, from the substance of the emails, onto the, who did this, why the Russians, oh, the Russians want to help Trump, oh, it worked like a charm. It couldn't have worked better because the New York Times, the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, all up in arms about why the Russians hacked into the, and not a word, or very, very few words about what the emails contained, namely proof. Written proof that Hillary stole the nomination from Bernie Sanders. So Hillary and her folks had hit on a really, really good, there was a book, Magnificent Obsession. Well, this was a magnificent distraction from the content of those emails. Now, they thought they had got home free, They sold us to the cable channels. They sold us. Hillary Clinton's PR person, what's her name now? Jennifer Palmieri, okay? She talks about driving a golf cart around the convention grounds outside with the CNN, with all the cable and network stations are. And she said, you know, my job was to push the story that the Russians interfered with our election by getting Julian Assange to publish these documents, these scurrilous documents about the DNC. And she said, you know, it was really hard because it was hard to believe. It was hard for me to believe, says Jennifer Palmieri. And then, this is the point here. Then, says Jennifer, when we got back to Brooklyn, so we're talking the end of July, right, beginning of August, when we got back to Brooklyn, of course, that's where Hillary Clinton's campaign headquarters was. When we got back to Brooklyn, then some of the intelligence agencies and the newspaper people, the journalists that have really good ties with the intelligence agencies, then they gave us all the information we needed to show it was the Russians. And then Obama, Obama helped the White House to start confirming some of this stuff. Then we were all set to go. And then we were able to get the Homeland Security guys and the National Intelligence Director. Oh, man, we were on a roll. We could show that it was the Russians that interfered in our election by hacking into the DNC computers and then hacking into John Podesta's computers. Now, what happened? Well, turned out the American people didn't care all that much about this, or maybe didn't believe Hillary Clinton. In any case, she lost. Now, this was a shocker.
I remember.
Because everyone expected her to win, of course, the Russians included. So this is a tangential comment here, but I know a little bit about Russian leaders, having watched them closely for 55 years now.
Yeah.
If you were a Russian leader, would you have any truck with Trump? In other words, would you have any burning desire to ensure that this insecure, this unpredictable guy would be the fellow with his fingers on the nuclear codes? I'm convinced that's crazy. He never
would
have done that.
For that matter, would you want to take the chance of Clinton winning and realizing, oh, is this you're favoring Trump, huh?
Yeah, that's
the it's a real
thing.
Risk.
In other words, if he were, unless he was clairvoyant, unless he alone on this planet Earth knew that there was a good chance that Trump would win, then it makes no sense at all for him to alienate their major antagonist. Still more, Hillary hates him already from another movie picture. But to do this, so the whole thing didn't smell right from the beginning. And just to wind up the business about the Russian hack, we know it was not a hack by the Russians or by anybody else. There's a celebrated so-called hack on the 5th of July of 2016, and we have the forensics for it. We have the metadata. And guess what? Even though this is the prime example of what they blame on the Russians, it could not have been the Russians. It could not have been a hack. Now, this is not very complicated. Stay with me. It has to do with the principles of physics, okay? Now, there's one called fluid dynamics, okay? You got a pipe, right? And it's got a certain dimension. It's got a certain capacity, okay? Now, you can't push more oil or whatever through that pipe than its capacity allows. And you certainly can't push it through faster than the capacity allows. So take the Internet. Imagine it as a pipe, okay? We knew the capability of the Internet on July 5, 2016. It was capable of moving so many bits or bytes or whatever you call them at such a speed. This stuff on July 5th was copied, not downloaded, copied at a speed that exceeded by 3 times the speed that the Internet was capable of at that time. And guess what? The speed that it did get, well, you could say downloaded, copied, you know, downloaded slash copied, the speed that did copy this thing was exactly the right speed for it to be copied onto a thumb drive, okay? So, and what else? There's ample evidence that that copy, not hack, in other words, not hacked through the Internet, the way hacks normally go, but a copy onto a thumb drive, guess where it happened? In the Eastern time zone. Whoa, Eastern time zone. Well, maybe Maine or Florida. Well, it could be New York. It could be Brooklyn. It could be Washington. So we know that. How do we know that? Well, in our group of veteran intelligence professionals for sanity, we have 2 former technical directors of the National Security Agency, including Bill Binney, who devised many of these systems and now can talk about them because of what Ed Snowden revealed when he came out in Hong Kong. So we've written about this. This probably is coming as brand new news to anyone who hasn't followed the Internet. We know that the celebrated hack of July 5 was not a hack by the Russians or anyone else. It was a download copy onto a thumb drive, and whoever got that thumb drive in the Eastern time zone, no doubt, in my view, got it to Julian Assange a couple weeks before the Democratic election, and he proceeded to order it in his orderly way, not change a thing, but make it easily searchable, and put it out 3 days before the convention. Oops, wait a second. Nobody took any notice of what was in there because the Russians did it, the Russians did it, the Russians did it. So it's really a very sorry affair. And now we have now we have text messages exchanged between very high-level FBI operatives. Actually, the fellow who was supposed to run the counterintelligence department of the FBI and his lover, who was a high-level lawyer working in the office of the deputy director of the FBI. Her name is Lisa Page, and his name is Peter Strzok. And I've been writing a little bit about this, and usually the title includes some variant of dumbstruck. because Strzok, even though he's supposed to be the head of counterintelligence, assured his paramour, Lisa, don't worry about it. They can intercept our messages. This is a secure way to conduct our affair and the rest of our affairs. And so what do you have? Well, with the first batch that was released because Congress found out about them, the FBI released these. It's actually the Department of Justice Inspector General. And it has Lisa Page saying, oh, Hillary's got to win by 1,000,000 to nothing. And Peter said, oh, yeah, that'll be really great. And then Peter says, Lisa, you know, I want to believe, this is a direct quote, I want to believe what you said there in the office of McCabe's office there, you know, namely that Trump can never win. But we need an insurance policy. You know, it's unlikely. It's sort of like, if you're 49, you're not going to die, but you take out an insurance policy anyway. So in the unlikely event that Trump wins, we need to create an insurance policy. Now, whoa, what's that all about? Well, it's not only about the hacking and the Russian interference in the election, but it's fixing the system so that the courts that are supposed to prevent illegal spying on American citizens are persuaded to spy, to conduct intrusive surveillance on Trump and his campaign starting well before the election. That's what happened, and that's the felony right there.
You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, broadcast out of Winnipeg on campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM and on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. We are also podcast on the website globalresearch.ca.
Maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel there are parallels between the case for attempting to build, a fraudulent case that there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq back in 2003, and today this apparently fraudulent case of Russian interference in the elections. And if we could maybe explore some of the that parallel, if that's an adequate one. For one thing, they're not just trying to build the case that the wider public will believe, but maybe certain individuals, like other people within the FBI, the White House, people who might need some convincing.
Well, it's really pretty simple. You got a bunch of corrupt people at the highest levels. They wanted Hillary Clinton to win. John Brennan probably wanted to stay on as head of the CIA. Mike Morrell, who used to be acting head of the CIA, threw his hat into Hillary's ring very early on, saying, I used to be acting director of the CIA, and I'm supporting Hillary Clinton. So they all kind of were in her camp, and they wanted to make sure that she would win. Now, why did they take these incredible risks? Well, the answer is simple. She was a shoo-in. If people found out that there were unauthorized wiretaps or that they were authorized by fraudulent intelligence, which is the case, well, who's going to care if Hillary's the president, you know? So, yeah, there were certain parallels, but it all goes back to having fraudulent people in charge. And when they whopped up this dossier with scurrilous charges about what Trump had done in Moscow many years ago and how the KGB or the KGB successor had got pictures of him cavorting with prostitutes in a hotel, all this kind of stuff. Well, here's what happened, okay? They got this thing together, and they waited, and they did this hand-picked analysis, that is, analysis by hand-picked people in the FBI, CIA, and NSA. And by the way, in the intelligence business, if you handpick the people, you're handpicking the results, right? You're handpicking the conclusion that they will reach. The conclusion was that no less than Vladimir Putin ordered a interference operation in the U.S. election to include hacking into the DNC computers. Now, what evidence did they adduce? Well, there wasn't any. There was Zippo. And, the explanation they gave, well, there might be more evidence in the classified version, but they've had a year and a half now to come up with that, and it doesn't exist, okay? Mm-hmm. So what am I talking about here? I'm saying that on January 6th of 2017, so last year, it all came to a denouement. And what happened was the head of the CIA, the head of NSA, and the head of the FBI, Comey, briefed President-elect Trump, again, January 6th. And the three of them showed him this memo. And they said, Mr. Trump, Mr. President-elect, sorry to tell you this, but it looks like you're president because of the Russians. So Trump, if I were Trump, I'd say, who are these guys? Why are these guys giving me this memo now that I'm really sort of illegitimate here as I enter the presidency in 2 weeks, okay? Then what happens? And here's the denouement. Then James Comey says, John Brennan and Rogers, Admiral Rogers and Brennan, would you leave the room now? I need to show President-elect some very sensitive material. What does he show him? He shows him the dossier. Okay. Now, what's he doing?
Good question.
Well, Trump is no dope, okay? This is the time-honored tactic of the FBI, as soon as a president-elect, as soon as you get him alone in a room, you say, "Now, Mr. President-elect, we just want to let you know, this stuff is not altogether confirmed or confirmable, but we have this information on you and that, and these people are saying this, and this dossier is probably going to get out into the press, and so we just want to let you know that, okay? Now, Trump, how does he react? Well, I would have reacted this exact same way. I would have fired Comey the next day. This is what you're not supposed to do with a president coming into office. And what did Trump say when he finally fired him? It was the Russia thing, the Russia-Trump thing. Everybody miscalculated or deliberately misinterpreted that to say, oh, he doesn't want Comey or any good guys like Mueller investigating his ties with Russia and how he persuaded Vladimir Putin to help him win the election. That's it. No, it wasn't that at all. If I would have fired Comey from on the spot, I said, get out of here. I don't want to have any of this FBI stuff. J. Edgar Hoover on steroids. Take your dossier and flush it down that toilet right over there and then get out of my sight. That's what I would have done. So, I need to, Michael, back up just for half a second, okay? Because even some of my best friends say, oh, so you support Trump. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Trump is unparalleled as the worst president the United States has ever had, and that includes felons like George W. Bush, okay? He's terrible. But you know what I object to? I object to playing fast and loose with the truth. Now, if you can't impeach a guy like Trump based on what he's done already, giving more to the rich, depriving the poor, making it impossible for my 9 grandchildren to have clean air and clean water when they get to be my age. If you can't impeach a guy for that, don't make up stuff about him and then making it impossible for us to have a decent relationship with the Russians so you can sell more arms to people who are fighting the Russians, okay? Don't do that. So all I'm saying here is that we're peculiar, we intelligence analysts. We took one oath and one oath only, and that was to support and defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that, of course, includes the Fourth Amendment. And a lot of this stuff that's coming out now shows that things like this scurrilous dossier and other fraudulent reports about Russian hacking were used to persuade the court, the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Court, to issue permissions for various and sundry to intercept, surveil Trump's people, and then to leak information to unauthorized people like the people in New York Times, Washington Post. That's where it gets really, really sticky, because that is out and out felonious. You can't lie to the court to get information to violate the Fourth Amendment. Now, people in Canada and elsewhere may be a little confused about the Fourth Amendment. Why I consider it so important. Why Ed Snowden considered it so important that he was willing to risk his life in revealing the gross abuses of it. I want to read it to you. It's one sentence, okay? So people get some sense of what our forefathers and foremothers thought really important. See, what used to happen when the British ruled us, and they ruled Canadians as well, but when they ruled us, back before the election, they had carte blanche to go into your house, seize your papers, seize your money, seize your daughters, okay? And the framers of our Constitution were hell-bent and determined that that was not going to happen in the United States of America. So here's the Fourth Amendment, okay? The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the places to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Now, what Bush and Cheney introduced was warrantless surveillance without any probable cause, unless you want to say every American is probably a criminal of some kind. There's probably something on everybody, so we can. So that's how gross the violations have been, and when this used to take place under J. Edgar Hoover, and under NSA in previous incarnations, when it came to light in the early 70s, they created this FISA law to prevent it from ever happening again. There was the commission, the Church Committee, that came in and wrote this law. So this is really very, very serious stuff. And we know, of course, that conversations between ill-starred Michael Flynn, the general who was going to be the National Security Advisor and was for a couple of weeks, well, those things were surveilled and leaked. See, what you can do, if you're high enough an official, you can see the true names, mm-hmm. including American names. And then you can feel free to leak them to the New York Times. So, you know, here's an interesting thing. In the midst of all this stuff, the Wall Street Journal complained loudly and bitterly. CIA only... New York Times is the only place the CIA will talk to. Why don't they talk to us? It was so blatant that Brennan and the others were doing to stack this thing in favor of Russian interference. Now it's all falling apart. And what I would say now is probably the most important thing. I have talked about the deep state, okay? Now, there is a deep state. I've been there. I've seen it. And now it's worse than ever. When I talk about the deep state, I talk about these people in the FBI at senior leadership levels, people in the CIA, whom I know well, John Brennan and his accomplices, and people in the NSA who really have trashed the Fourth Amendment just because Dick Cheney said they should. Now, what does this mean? Well, it means now that the intercepted messages that we have that the congressional committees have, showing that there was interference in our election, but it was by the FBI and the DOJ and the CIA and NSA, and that's written documentary evidence. So here are the congressional committees with this evidence. They have a four-page paper that the House Intelligence Committee has already put together. Now, there's a very curious hiatus now. They put it together. You can sanitize those things in an hour. I've done it, okay? But there's been a hiatus now of about 5-6 days. Should they do this? Well, it's a very dangerous thing to do. And yesterday, the FBI made a big statement. Now, actually, it was the Associate Attorney General who runs the FBI. He says, look, this would be very, very reckless. Very reckless to release this information. We want to see it first. And the head of the House Intelligence Committee, Nunes, says, well, wait a second. It's nothing new in here. It's based on all the information we got from you guys. So we're not going to show it to you first. So what I'm saying here is the issue is joined. Now, the deep state almost always wins, okay? So if you see the congressional investigators backing off, you can yawn and say, well, you know, they're not oversight committees. They're overlook committees. And FBI probably has lots of dirt on these guys as well. And they're susceptible of blackmail. So, you know, that's the way it goes. But if you see the committees holding these people accountable, these are felonies, okay? These people should go to jail. Now, if that happens, whoa. It's going to be a real Donnybrook here in Washington that we've never seen the likes of, and I mean never, at least in my 55 years here. And it's going to be really labile, as the Germans say. It's going to be very, very itsy-kitsy to see who will come out on top. The Constitution is clear as to who should come out on top. The representatives of people in the Congress, not flunkies appointed by the likes of George Bush or Donald Trump. So the intelligence people have been found out with their hands in the cookie jar. They interfered with an election to let Hillary Clinton win. The whole deal depends on their conviction. 83% and she was going to win by, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their conviction that they would never have to pay any price for what they've done. Now, whoops, they may have to pay a price. If I had to bet, I would say the deep state will win again. But I'm hoping that it will be otherwise this time and that our congressional leaders will show the spunk to hold these people accountable, because if they're not held accountable now, they never will be.
You just explained at length about how the Foreign Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act can be subverted through this idea of dreaming up sort of like a fake dossier, all in the name of digging dirt, undermining the Fourth Amendment. We have a Canadian equivalent with our Charter of Rights. I'm wondering, is this an unprecedented use of that particular mechanism, or have there been other applications of it? And I mention this because, to reiterate your point, this goes beyond Trump and how bad he is. This could be used against a Bernie Sanders. It could be used against, whatever individual ends up in the head office and is perhaps not keen to play by the rules or play according to the rules of the deep state.
Well, it's a perceptive question, Michael, and the answer is yes, it has been used before. Yes, it's being used now. Now, when J. Edgar Hoover had files on everyone of any importance in this country, on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., for example, and used them for his own nefarious purposes, well, everyone was afraid of that. You know, let me give you an example. Bobby Kennedy, not a bad guy in my view. He's Attorney General. Now, how was it that he approved the surveillance on Dr. King? How was it that he approved sending these scurrilous letters saying, "Oh, we've got the goods on you, Martin, and we know who you're sleeping with, and you better commit suicide"? You know, why was Bobby Kennedy doing that? Well, an old FBI friend took me aside and said, "Ray, Bobby Kennedy knew that J. Edgar Hoover had the book on all those nice little parties with those damsels and all those pretty women that he and Jack used to have at the pool in the White House. J. Edgar Hoover has a book on everybody." So that's probably enough explanation, Ray. That's the way things work in this country. A more recent example, Nancy Pelosi. Now, Nancy Pelosi, of course, is the head of Democrats in the House, has been for a long time. But she made something of a name for herself by having the longest tenure on the House Intelligence Committee, of which she was extremely proud until it became known that the House Intelligence Committee, in the person of Nancy Pelosi, had been briefed on the illegal surveillance, had been briefed on torture. Then Nancy Pelosi turned hostile toward the intelligence agencies. She said, these intelligence people, they come in and they mislead us all the time. They mislead us. Oh, right. Okay. So what happened? November 2006, the Democrats take back the House. Where does impeachment proceedings start? In the House of Representatives. Where? In the Judiciary Committee. I go there with Cindy Sheehan to talk to John Conyers, who is the incoming chair of the... Well, actually, he was the chair of the Judiciary Committee again. And we say, when are you going to impeach George H. George Bush and Dick Cheney for starting a war on fraudulent intelligence. So that's off the table. What do you mean it's off the table? Nancy Pelosi says it's off the table. The Constitution makes it on the table, and you're the head of the judiciary. There's nothing in there, John Conyers. There's nothing in the Constitution that says John Conyers has to investigate or start impeaching proceedings against George Bush. So I left that meeting. Well, we asked her why, and he said, well, Nancy says that if we appear divisive, that we won't win as big in the next election. I'm telling that story to my NSA colleagues, right? And they're saying, oh, okay, Ray, so you are outraged because of the crass politics here, right? They wanted to win by 2 or 3 people more in the next election. But, Ray, let us tell you why Nancy Pelosi wouldn't go against George Bush for impeachment. It was crass politics, but it was at least as much that the security services, what we call the deep state, have chapter and verse on Nancy Pelosi and everybody else, and that therein lies a major problem. It's called blackmail, and whether it worked this time, whether Devin Nunes is clean as a whistle, I hope he is, whether the other congresspeople in positions of authority and with the responsibility to hold these crooks accountable, we'll have to see. But that's at play here, and it's something that's never mentioned, of course, and that's why I never get invited onto CNN or any of the so-called mainstream media.
I know that in some quarters, the major media outlets are considered part of this deep state. But at the same time, I can also acknowledge that the major media have been so focused on this official legend of Russiagate and, Trump's such a bad guy and stole the elections and all of that, that in a way they've kind of boxed themselves in the corner. It's clear there were certain key questions that they needed to be asking about this intelligence estimate, the report that came out on this on the 6th of January about Russian interference, the Christopher Steele dossier and whatnot. And, you know, rather than get caught having not done their job, they kind of have to try to smooth things over. And so they're not in a hurry to get people like you on their show or report honestly about the struck page texts and ask all those sorts of critical questions. So I guess I'm just wanting to try to get your take on to what extent media silence on this issue reflects the structure of power versus damage control.
Well, again, Michael, that's a really good question because the media is part of the deep state in this sense. And what I try to say in every interview that I have is that having been in Washington for 55 years, I've seen a lot of change. There's one change that dwarfs all the others in its importance, and that is that we no longer have, in any real sense, a free media. The Fourth Estate is dead. TV, newspapers, forget about it. Well, this latest thing is the most interesting. The fact that, text messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, there's been a glitch. They've been lost. They've been deleted. Oh, God. Oh, how embarrassing. And at the same time, NSA lost all these messages. What a coincidence. Because, you know, if NSA always is back up, and so if the FBI lost it, well, NSA lost those messages too. Oh, you know, what a terrible thing. So what happens, okay? Well, 2 days ago in the Washington Post, and I get that delivered, so I have here it is on the front page. It says there's something about, no, there's nothing on the front page. They're behind the editorial page and the op-ed page on the very back of the first section. There's one little column, and it's headed, the Department of Justice begins a search for lost FBI messages. And it's pretty, you know, it's a small little column. And the page is dominated by a big picture of Charles Kushner, the dad of Jared Kushner, and this fellow Papadopoulos, who his fiance defends his decision to cooperate with the court. Drivel, okay? Mm. Now, what happened today? Here's the headline. FBI didn't save text messages from thousands of agency phones. So they didn't save it. Oh, then the little subhead, glitch, G-L-I-T-C-H. Glitch affected many more than two officials who investigated Trump. So it's not that the FBI deleted these things, and these things were very much in demand since they covered this time period between Peter Strzok and his paramour, but it was just a little glitch. So that's a glitch. Okay, now, how many paragraphs in this thing? Well, 14. Where you have to go to find out that one of the messages reveals that Peter Strzok says to Lisa Page, he said, you know, I don't know if I'm going to take part in this probe about Russian interference because, you know, quote, of my gut. I have my gut sense and concern that there's no big there, end quote. Whoa! Here, is this guy saying what my friends and I have been saying for a whole year, that there's no there? Well, he is, and it's right there in black and white. But you know what? It's not until the very end of the 13th paragraph of the 14th paragraph article on page A8. Now, I don't know. If I were an editor of the Washington Post, Washington, New York Times, I'm taking direction from the White House and from the CIA, and they tell me, look, there are going to be hearings now in the House and the Senate, and they're going to be accusing high-level FBI officials of felonies. But please, don't carry them, okay? C-SPAN, surely you've got some other things you can, some meetings in Winnosha, Wisconsin, that you... So please, don't give it any... How is the Post, is the Times going to be able to play this thing down on page 20 or on page 8 and try to brave through this thing and say, no, it was the Russians, when there isn't one scintilla of evidence, despite all the stories about Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff? You know, if it weren't so serious, Michael, it would be laughable. But it is serious, and it's coming to a denouement in the next few weeks. And whether the deep state is able to carry it off, well, I think they have the odds, but I'd like to see Congress stepping up to its constitutional prerogative to exercise some real oversight rather than to look through the window and overlook everything that's happened.
Pass the popcorn. Ray McGovern, it's been a pleasure speaking with you and tapping into your insights into these behind-the-scenes goings-on. I thank you and look forward to speaking to you again.
Well, watch the next couple of weeks. It's going to be very interesting. Thank you for having me.
You're quite welcome. We've been speaking with Ray McGovern, who's a former CIA intelligence analyst, and he's co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. His website is raymcgovern.com.
You've been listening to the Global Research News Hour. You can listen to our programs every week on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg and on partnering radio stations across Canada and the United States. We are now also broadcast on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. You can also download each episode from the website globalresearch.ca. To leave feedback on this program, email globalresearchnewshour@gmail.com. I'm series host, creator, and producer Michael Welch. Join us again next week.